Welcome to the CMO Marketing Podcast, where we interview business owners, leaders, or marketing professionals to find out their lessons and stories for success.
Welcome to the CMO Marketing Podcast, episode 116, with your host, me, Simon Dell. If this is your first time tuning in, then welcome. If you are a returning listener, then welcome back. Today on the show, we have a gentleman by the name of Darren Needham Walker. That surname is double barreled if you go to look for him on LinkedIn. He is the Chief Marketing Officer, the CMO of Technology One. Now, for any of you that don't know Technology One, ASX listed, one of Australia's top 200 companies, offices across six countries, and they have over 1,200 customers. Their focus is on government, education, regional statutory authorities, and they basically do very smart software. Darren is the Chief Marketing Officer. He has been since 2019, but also he's had a very, very interesting career working with other major companies such as HP, Lenovo, IBM, you know, all the big brands, big names. A very entertaining chap, very lovely to talk to, with a lot of good insights and very well worth you listening to. Now, before we jump into the interview with Darren, a few housekeeping rules. If you get the chance to rate and review us, please do that, especially on iTunes or Apple Podcasts or whatever it's called. If you want to appear on the podcast or you know someone else that would be good appearing on the podcast, then please email us at hello@cmo.com. If you want to find out a little bit more about CMO, we are Australia's only labour hire marketing agency. We do marketing staff on demand. Come and find out about how we work and what we do and how we can help your business. The web address is cmo.com, or you can email me, simon@cmo.com. We're on LinkedIn, Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, you name it, we're there. Especially come and watch us on TikTok because we've got some fun videos on there. Finally, big shout out to Gilberto, the podcast boss, who puts this together for us every week. And that's pretty much it. So without further ado, let's jump into the interview with Darren Needham Walker. Welcome to the CMO Marketing Podcast. This is going to possibly be one of the most entertaining 30 minutes I've certainly had so far this year. Welcome to the show, Darren Needham Walker.
Hey, Simon. How are you?
I am very well, mate. How are you?
I'm living the dream.
Well, I think we should stress to everybody who watches this that it is A, Friday afternoon, and B, you do have wine in your hand there.
Oh, well, actually, I do, but it is 3:30 in the afternoon.
Well, exactly. Exactly. So it's the Australian way is that you should be drinking at this time of the day, shouldn't you?
Everything in moderation, please. Everything in moderation.
So we'll very quickly explain who you are, because obviously, I do need to make the fact that we work with you guys. So there is a vested interest in this conversation, but
talk afterwards then.
we should. You are possibly one of, if not, I'm just trying to think if you're the most senior marketing person we've had on this show. And we've had a lot of marketing people on this show. You're the group director of marketing and communications for Technology One. So do you want to kind of give us the, explain who Technology One are to the uninitiated out there?
Well, look, uninitiated, you know, nearly 3 years ago, I had no idea who they were when I was approached for this job. And Technology One is probably Australia's first startup. Right. Adrian Marco started this technology company, software-driven company, 35 years ago, this coming July next year. And back when startups just weren't a thing, and particularly not in tech.
No, they were just called businesses then, weren't they? They weren't called
startups. They were. But, yeah. we market enterprise-grade SaaS-delivered software into six industry verticals: federal government, state government, local government, higher education, financial services, health community services, and asset-intensive, which is ports, airports, and all that sort of stuff. Right. So financials, HR, asset management, but all one line. And Adrian, when he started the business 35 years ago, had this premise that we need to make things simple for businesses Because when you're in a business, you're not natively tuned to do the financials and HR reporting. You're here for construction or delivering an airport or something. But the back office stuff needs to be as simple as possible.
Yeah.
And way back then, and throughout the four generations of our software, Adrian's had us reinventing not who we are, because the premise is still the same, but what we deliver has to be simple and it has to be consistent across, the experience has to be consistent across all of our industries. And chances are, if you're in Australia, 73% of Australia's population in the background are running on TechOne software with their councils. If you've got a university or a TAFE degree, 65% of Australian TAFE and universities in this country run on TechOne.
There you go.
We've been around forever. But the great opportunity is, as a marketer, to come in and change that.
Yeah. And we'll get to how you do that in a minute. But so I guess, what are we talking here? 35 years, middle of the 80s? Would that be right? My maths is pretty shoddy. Yeah.
That's why we're in marketing.
That's why we're in marketing, exactly. Yeah.
It was 87 when we listed on the ASX.
Well, okay.
And was actually incorporated. The interesting fact is that with TechOne, right, when Adrian had this amazing finance software, was our first product, but he didn't have any money, right? And he really had an amazing product. And our first customer, one of our first customers, Metagat Industries. If you're ever in Tenerife in Brisbane, right, there is the wool stores down there, and you'll see Metagat's.
Yes, yes.
So Metagat family actually invested in TechOne.
Right.
Said, you know what? We will back you on this. We'll give you a few bob and we'll give you somewhere to operate out of. And it happened to be a demountable building in the front of their hide tanning factory in Hemet.
Right.
So it stunk to God.
Yeah.
But, Adrian had a couple of bucks put behind the company and he had somewhere to work from, but not somewhere you'd want to actually take a customer.
No.
And even today, Metagat's are still on the board.
Right.
So it really has that bit of a family feel to it, which I love
that's
about it.
Probably one of the best investments that they'll have ever made in their lives. I can only imagine the share price in 1987 versus the share price today. But yeah, and the offices now, you're not in a demountable building in Hemant anymore, are you? It's substantially more attractive than that.
We have four floors in Wickham Street in the Valley, right opposite the Emporium. State of the art offices there. They're fun. But the beliefs that Adrian brought to the company 35 years ago still exist today. And Edward Chung, our CEO, reinforces this. We have breakfasts, if you like carbs. And I was like 55 kilos lighter before starting. But we have cereals and breads and all the condiments that you can have. And Adrian wants to make sure that his people are fed and happy. And coffee machines are everywhere. And we do have fruit now, which is great. But we also, on most levels, like most ad agencies, we have probably enough alcohol to survive the winter coming.
Yes, I was going to say, if there is a zombie apocalypse, I'm going to camp out in your building.
Mate, I'm already there. I've already started squirreling away the best kid in the world.
Before we talk more about the challenges that you have at TechOne, I just want to talk about your background, because we don't have enough time to go through the brands that you've worked with, but I just wanted to reel off the four that kind of jumped out at me, which is IBM, Lenovo, HP, and Panasonic. I mean, they're the gold standard of global brands, really, aren't they?
They certainly are.
Be careful what you say.
Wow. I'm like, my goodness, when did I work for Panasonic?
I went right back there and found that,
Look, I'm really fortunate in my career having worked with some amazing brands. Maybe a couple that you haven't mentioned, but the opportunity in each has evolved me as a person and as a professional some way differently. At Panasonic, I was a salesperson. Yeah. I was here in Brisbane at Nudgee Road at their offices on the phone selling stuff to Retrovision.
Okay.
And I thought marketing were a bunch of, let's say it, wankers. But that gave me the opportunity to actually expand in what my passion was. And at that stage, I was a snotty-nosed 23-year-old. I had no idea what I wanted to do, except for sales made a lot of money.
Yeah. And you wanted some of that money when you're 23 years old. That's what you think about, isn't it?
Mate, 23 years old, Brisbane 88, 1888, 1888, God, I'm not that old. But 1988 with the World Expo that was here, of course I wanted money.
Yeah.
You know, but it actually launched me into my career and actually unpacked some latent expertise that I had that I didn't even know I had.
When did you make that switch? Because the roles that I saw that you've had have been as varied as the companies, but there was a switch obviously within that to marketing. And there must have been a point when you've suddenly gone, right, well, perhaps marketing aren't the colouring in department that everyone makes them out to be. And perhaps I would like to investigate this a bit more. What sort of triggered that?
Look, when Panasonic offered me a role, I had just turned 21 and I was at Panasonic. They wanted me to go to Sydney to become a product marketing manager, right, or an assistant product marketing manager, you know, and on $17,000 a year. Yes, that proves how old I was. Yeah. And I was fascinated on how we were trying to motivate people to buy our product, you know, to create that need. Where they would come and buy, you know, and at that stage I was in cordless telephones or facsimiles. Faxes don't even exist now. And it fascinated me, the human psyche, on, you know, what are we trying to do to entice that motivation? But also at the same time, something that I was horrible at was math. I could not add up, we spoke about that earlier, but I worked with one of my first managers at Panasonic in Sydney, was a Japanese guy called Eiji Tanimura. And he goes, Darren, you're looking at it all the wrong way. You're looking at it overcomplicating. Let it paint you a picture and let it tell you a story. And I'm like, I was like 25 at this point. And what could a bunch of numbers on a spreadsheet on a dot matrix printer tell me? And from that day forward, a guy that could barely pass maths in society, which is like the lowest level, numbers are now something which is probably one of my greatest passions. And that's what drove me and how the numbers help me drive decisions to be able to make more effective marketing strategies to influence that customer's behavior.
I want to spend most of the time today talking about Technology One because I think there's a huge...
Okay.
We talk about something else. I don't know. We talk about the weather.
Let's not talk about the Maroons because we've done the Origin.
When you arrive, day one, when you walk into Technology One, what's your first impressions? What stands out the most to you?
And from
a marketing perspective rather than from,
Oh, no, I was going to go the heat because I just moved back from North America where it was just hit a peak of a blizzard. And I walked into, 38-degree heat and 100% humidity in Brisbane.
Because you were in Portland, weren't you, in North America, was that? Yeah.
Portland, Oregon.
Good beers and breweries there, I'm told.
Breweries and the coffee. Amazing. Amazing. What hit me the most, was the marketing professionals they're brilliant. I've got some of the most amazing staff. But it was a service to the business. It wasn't part of the business. I didn't see the people holding their heads high, or having that element of fun. We actually can change people's beliefs, directions, and need states. We understand or should understand people better than they almost understand themselves. But in the conversations that I had and the on that day one, besides, they had an amazing morning tea.
You remember that from your first day.
I remember the sausage rolls and party pies. But I then subsequently got to know the teams and the people and the passion that they had for the company. And I'm like, all right, that's the first thing that I need to do is how do we just unlock that? It wasn't based on lack of skill or lack of motivation. It was how do I provide a path for them to do what they do the best? And, as a senior, and I mean that more of a senior citizen marketing leader, that's my passion. Unlocking that potential. Because I can remember years ago, a manager of mine who ended up being the CMO of Oracle actually said, you know what, your problem is you don't know actually how good you are at this stuff. If you just get rid of all the crap bits, you're actually pretty good at this. But when you can see that potential in people and you know that you have the ability to unlock it, it's motivating, it's inspiring. It's what gets you up to be in the office at 7 a.m. in the morning.
That kind of leads me on to that next question. So then what impresses you in marketing people that you work with, or ones that you've met that are outside of your organization? What's kind of, you know, what stands out? And for anyone that's going to have an interview with Technology One, they should listen carefully. So, yeah.
I can't help you. If you actually interview with me, it's usually the weirdest environment that anyone will ever get. What you see is what you get, literally. The air of curiosity and questioning what next. You know, almost the so what. That childlike curiosity on, okay, we've done that, so what? What are we going to do to continue the conversation, emerge the conversation, you know, increase the conversation? One of the most impressive young CMOs I've met was Zach, who's the CMO of Canva.
Everyone knows
Canva. And him and I were presenting at a conference in Sydney a few weeks back. And he got up on stage and he delivered what he'd learned in going through hypergrowth, going from a company of five people to 1,600 people. And the lessons he delivered, I learned something. And it's through that era of curiosity that I think propels really good marketers. We can't be complacent. We have to start question everything, including what is our role in this world.
And by contrast, I guess, what frustrates you more about the people that you work, or not necessarily the people that you work with, but marketers, or, you know, because let's not make it about the people that you work with right now, but what's been the frustration of, and perhaps in the other direction as well, senior people that you've worked with that has perhaps frustrated you in the past?
Look, I think this is something that most marketers will be able to relate to. Armchair marketers, right? I don't like the color of that ad, or, you know, why did you select that image? Look, everyone has – oh, no, they don't. Leave it up to the expert. Leave it up to the professionals. That infuriates me. Okay. I hate ambiguity. I absolutely hate it. You tell me, oh, well, let's do an ad campaign. Mm. Okay, to do what? How do you measure success? And, you know, ROI measurement, it's always been the bane of our existence, because we say something's white, the CFO will say it's black, and the COO will say it's purple. But if we can triangulate around a couple of key success measures, not just to prove that we got there, but give us a proof point that we can actually celebrate when we do. Otherwise, it's an ambiguous goal or objective that we end up getting to. And that's also, you know, marketers that I've encountered over my years is where it's an ambiguous outcome. You know, I want to celebrate success and failure for that matter, all right, and recognize it for what it is. Elon Musk once said, you know, failure, you know, is the first attempt in learning. And that is so true. And I find that, you know, that marketers are so often pushed into that color and in department that failure is a dirty word. We don't progress as humans. We don't progress as a profession unless we prepare to take calculations.
You've mentioned a couple of times you used the word passion and curiosity and things like that. How do you make software customers in the government and in big organizations, how do you make them passionate about your software? How does that even happen? Because you can understand it, why people are passionate about iPhones and Teslas and, you know, and chocolate bars and ice cream. How do you make people passionate about Technology One?
It's the same thing. You know, I've been in consumer businesses and, you know, B2B business. It's all about building up what it can this do for them.
Right.
Right. How can this make their life better? And how does it elevate them? Mm. You know, we want to do things that are going to make us more successful, make our lives easier.
Yeah.
You know, and if you look at the catchphrase for Technology One, you know, transforming business, making life simple. That's it.
Yeah.
Right. The problem statement that we have is our value prop is way ahead of its time. Mm. Right. I think we're catching up now, but when we started having all these different products that are linked together, you know, I call it, to the layman's term, you know, and because I am not a technical person, it's like Microsoft Office or Google Docs. They all work together. You can plug one in into the other and so forth. In enterprise software, someone might be using a HR system, a finance system, and they plug them together loosely,
yeah.
right, with what's called APIs. Ours does it all. So our finance system talks to the HR system. You know, an example of that is, you know, look at Moreton Bay. They put cameras on, Moreton Bay Council put cameras on the front of the dump trucks, right, and which picks up potholes, which goes up to their asset management system. So we need to fix this, or our mapping system.
Right.
We need to fix this. We need to allocate this team of people, all these assets, trucks and blah, 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 blah. Let's pick all these people out of the HR system. Bang, we need to buy stuff through procurement, and it's all done automatically
wow.
in one system.
Yeah.
That is the value. And how do you articulate something as mind-blowing as that yeah. is our opportunity. But it's all about what's in it for them and understanding what their problem they're trying to prevent or overcome.
Well, and I'd imagine in situations like that, they probably didn't even know that that was possible. I bet they didn't even know that that was a problem, that someone could put a camera on the front of a garbage truck and look at potholes.
Yeah. But if you look at most of our customers, you know, have been with us for the entire journey.
Yeah.
I was in Canberra a couple of months ago, and some of our Canberra customers, you know, big departments, right, have been with us for 29 years. It's the stickiness of the application. And then once they realize, you know, we have 14 products, not everyone takes each product. But, you know, if you look at our finance system, you know, La Trobe University will be using it 1 second. Department of Treasury will be using it the next. The same finance product.
Yeah, yeah.
It's running it all in. Their data's over here, but they're using the one thing in the cloud. Yeah. So it's driving those efficiencies. But at the end of the day, people want to know what they're buying is fit for purpose. Yeah. It will deliver on its promise. It's secure. It's not going to get screwed up, hacked up, or whatever. Right? And it has scalable up and down to fit with the business needs. We've had customers that came to us and moved to the cloud with us just as COVID hit. And have gone, well, thank God we did that. And it was through COVID. We were busy as ever moving, and we focused not on just acquiring new customers. We actually dialed that down, but actually taking our customers that were still using the old servers and picking them up and moving them to the cloud. Why? Because that was what they needed.
One of the other challenges that I always think about when I think of Technology One is this kind of beast of a marketing department that you have, because it's not just you and a couple of staff. I think what there's 25, 20, something like that, the 25, 30 of you. And I kind of go, 30. The moving parts for that is probably something that most marketing people can't even get their head around, the fact that there's all these people doing these, all these things in there. How is that structured, and how is that, you know, how do you motivate a team of 25 to 30 marketers every day?
And the diversity that I have in this team is unbelievable, which actually really excites me, because, you know, I have the campaign managers, or we call them industry marketing partners, that come up with the strategies on how we're going to sell to new customers in education, or move them from on-prem to SaaS, or sell them more product, right, across those six industries. Then I have corporate communications that write our messaging and value props and annual reports, website, blah, 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 blah. And then I have what we call SPNS, because we couldn't find a better name for it. Strategy, planning, and services.
Yeah.
I want to call it hub. It's a lot more simple. All right. But in that team alone, I have web dev. I have developers. I have content writers. Yeah. It's literally our own agency within our business.
Yeah.
All right. So we are fully self-sufficient to run campaigns. But now with the scale that we're doing them at, we leverage companies like yourself, CMO to help us with the flex, as well as, you know, other, you know, full service agencies to be able to deliver on the promises that I've made to the business. But how do you motivate a campaign manager versus a web dev or a designer?
Different, two completely different brain parts that are working in their heads. And
oh my goodness. We won't go into the id and the lizard brain and all this stuff. But you know what? I go from, there's no two conversations that I will have in any one day within my team that are the same. Right? But also, people are people. People want to be known with people. We did a recent, every 6 months we do a employee survey. Yep. And then we look at what are the key things that we want to address as a team for our team to elevate what we think about ourselves and how we think our standing is in the business. And you know, I said, all right, you guys go and focus on that and tell me what it is you want me to do. And one of the surprising things that I had let go is how much people and the team, when I say people, you know, the broader team, my leadership team, I speak to 100 times a day. But some of my individual contributors, the guys that are working in the teams, the coordinators or the marketing managers, well, they said, all we want is half an hour of his time. Yeah. Can we book in and I want to have half an hour every quarter and we'll just, you know, chew the shit and just talk about whatever, right? And relating that everyone's an individual, that is how you keep people motivated. Actually show an authentic style. And it doesn't have to be style, because if it's a style, it's not authentic. Yeah. But engage with everyone as you want to. There's one lady shorter on my team. Every time I see her, it just comes in and it's a big hug. There are other people on the team you wouldn't do that to. They'll probably smack you in the face if you try.
Yeah.
But recognize the individuals and really understand who they are and what they're wanting out of life.
If I asked them what they thought of you, what would they say?
Oh, he's all full of shit. Darren's a visionary. Do not get him into the detail.
Right.
When he starts getting into the detail, I'll just derail things. Because I've got a great team, you know, and not just the managers, the entire team. And the belief that I have is you've got to let people run it. Right? There's a natural tendency that you don't want to see people fail. You don't want to see people, you know, I'm going to say it, fuck up. Obviously, you don't want to see them do it royally. Or, you know, you want to prevent a catastrophe. But, you know, if there's a lesson to be learned, the best way to learn it is not me telling, allowing them to experience and find their way out, but be there as a support. And that is, I don't know, that's what I love to see, is as these guys move forward, that they're evolving. They're becoming better marketers. Yep. And in the process, they're broadening their horizon. And that all comes from the earlier statement. It's driven from curiosity.
Of all the marketing that you've done in all the years, what still is perhaps the best channel to reach that customer? If you were left with only one choice to do one thing, what would you do?
Oh, bloody hell. All right, I'm going to offend my friends that are in broadcast media. I'm going to offend my friends. You know what? That's the great choice. We don't have to do it. Damn. All right, stock price of News Corp has gone through its roof. No, because it's evolving. All right, Facebook used to be cool until, you know, people like me got on it and then kids abandoned it. All right, through our persona research recently, Instagram is a source of information for CIOs.
Right.
My younger cousin tells me that's how they find someone to date, but also CIOs in major corporate environments are using it for information. But you know what? Still, if you were to give me one bullet, I still think there is so much room in direct mail.
Okay.
Physical direct
Honest to God, you're probably the third person that said that in the past 5 podcasts. You know,
really?
And yeah, maybe not in the podcast, but just conversations I've had, interviews I've done on stage. Yeah, just direct mail. People, and there's a little ad agency 2 doors down from us now, and the guy who runs that said to me the other, we were doing a something for the Brisbane Business Hub. And he said, nobody else is doing direct mail. He said, you know, if you need to zig when everybody else is zagging. And he said, 100%. He said, direct mail is that.
And even back in the day when, and look, I still get magazines and direct mail that come in all the time, but there's nothing that stands out. Back in the day when direct mail was the key, all right, you still had the opportunity to do things that had a bit of a wow factor. I remember way back when, you know, I'd send a portable DVD player out, right, to a high value prospect, right, and you know, it would be in there talking about the company and their offerings and so forth. That would get people on the phone inquiring for more. I remember there was one article where I actually sent out a shoe, you know, it was a jogger or something, and hey, Rick, we'll give you another one, blah blah blah. You know, the fun is in the curiosity of how to do something different.
Yeah, I used to joke about doing lumpy mail and sending things to. I had a conversation the other day about a guy who did cladding for the outside of building, and he's invented this fireproof cladding. And he said there's only about 3 companies big enough in Australia to distribute this product. And he said to me, "How am I going to get through to the CEOs?" And I said, "What size sheets does this cladding come in?" And he's like, "Oh, big A0." I said, could we cut it down to an A4 sheet of cladding? And it's still like that thick. And he said, well, what are we going to do with it? I said, we're going to send it in the post to everybody in these three companies. And he's like, what? I said, I guarantee you'll get a phone call afterwards. I said, someone's going to call you and want to know about this cladding.
100%. You know, it may be Australia Post. Like,
they're not going to be happy with you. Absolutely, yeah.
No, but the magic is surprise and delight.
And curiosity curiosity, yeah.
You know, and a lot of people say that, you know, oh my God, it's impossible to do that. That's another word that never used with me. It's impossible. It's only impossible because we haven't done it yet. Let's find a way. All right. But yeah, I think some of the best marketing has yet to happen. All right. And I love working with the creatives as much as I do with the strategists. I've reviewed two strategies over the last one today and one in the UK a week ago, where I can actually sit there and read a marketing strategy and go back and say, no need for a formal review. This is approved. Go. When it comes together, and I explained to the team today, it's like when you see the orchestra all come in and they're flumbling around with their instruments, and then it just comes together and there's this beautiful classical piece that comes out. Yeah, and I've been fortunate enough in two weeks. That's pretty good going.
Last question for you today. Outside of technology, one outside of your industries, your favorite brands, your favorite company, whether you buy them or don't buy them, whatever they might be in whatever channel, what do you look at and go, that's a fantastic brand?
So look, there's two that I'm going to raise. Number one is Nike. I believe that they've always stayed true to who they are and unashamedly proud, and they're not afraid, particularly in recent years, to choose a controversial topic, not for media gain, because it actually adhered to their values. And I find that really powerful. Brand trust is the most volatile and probably at the lowest it's ever been. But when you stick to a brand's values and adhere to it, even if it makes you unpopular with certain sets, I think that's really powerful.
And I watched a couple of their TV adverts, TVCs in the last couple of years have actually been emotional experiences for what is a trainer for a shoe brand. And the story's good. I don't know whether have you read the book, The Shoe Dog book, The Story of Nike? If you get a chance, most startup, most business books about the stories of businesses aren't great, but Phil Knight, who was the founder, who actually wrote that book, it's a really good book. It's really nice to see the way that company evolved. And when you read that and then see who they are today, you kind of go, it's amazing how it's stayed with them all that time. So anyway, sorry, I interrupted you. The second one?
God, I can't remember. No, the other one that I really...
So that was going to be awkward, yeah.
Really? Yeah, that's going to be a bit awkward. No, everyone loves Apple, right? And I love for the simplicity that Steve did, and he delivered for that brand through the trials and tribulations. And, simplicity can be beautiful. But I think a brand that has really evolved on that piece, is Audi. A car brand. You look at the experiences they're delivering on the web. Their experience, if you look at the whole brand experience in its totality, they're living the persona that they want to build, that personality around the brand end to end. I think it's something that they have evolved into. They were not always there. They were trying to find their way, particularly as they entered the Australian market. I think they've done a really good job.
Yeah.
Across all customer touch points.
Do you think, just going back to Apple, and again, when I ask this question about it, Apple always comes up. Do you think the brand has the same spiritual value that it has without Steve being there?
There is, Apple was always the product that was for, I'm going to say, the alternate set. This is an IBM guy that PCs was, my growing up in the IT world. I think it will definitely survive. It's got a hard challenge. Tim Cook's got a massive challenge in front of him. Steve was a very, very powerful and imposing figure, not only within Apple, but driving the industry. And unashamedly bringing it back to that core, like you just mentioned with Nike. Right, as Apple evolves, right, it will find its new feet and, you know, it will find its direction. But it has become more mainstream now, right? To see someone walk around with, oh my God, an Apple phone, an iPod. iPod, if anyone remembers what they were, it is a mainstream brand now. So how does it go from being, maintain its brand integrity as something for the alternative to now something for everybody? It's in a very interesting place, but yes, it will evolve and it will move forward. And I think Tim's doing a great
job. How does Technology One do that? What's next for them in the next 10 years?
Yeah, funny enough, you know, we're going through a piece now and it goes back to the same thing, going back to the values, the same values that Adrian installed in the business 35 years ago, not making them relevant because they are relevant today, but how do we make them front and center? Now, you go to some companies like AWS, they have their 14 key values. We could go around to Tech One and the older staff would know what they are, but the newer staff don't. But they are still relevant and valid in how we operate as a company, as a family, as a constituent that supports a lot of bloody big business. So we're going back to basics and realigning on, why the hell are we here? To serve the markets that we participate and to deliver simplicity so they can make their businesses better.
Wonderful. Right. It's been exactly as I predicted it would be, entertaining and educational were the two words that I've written down here thinking, I hope he is these two things, and he was these two things.
Mate, I'm glad. Thank you, Simon. I really appreciate
it. We joke about it. It's generally lovely to talk to you just about, career path and what you're doing there, and it's been 37 minutes and I suspect it could have been 2 hours and I wouldn't have even noticed, but people will have switched off by now. They don't want to listen to us two anymore, so
come on, they want to listen to you.
No. Sure. We kind of found 30 minutes was a sort of sweet spot where everyone, I think it's something to do with the commute. That's like an average commute time and people will listen to it through their commute. Anyway, there you go. Look, thank you very much.
But hey, if any of your listeners want more, all right, maybe Darren, Simon and Darren will do a drive time series.
Yeah.
But mate, thank you so much for the opportunity. Mate.
Have a good rest. And I hope we all get out of lockdown soon because I can't keep drinking this much. It's not good for me.
I'm going to give it a good try.
Thank you, mate.
Take care, mate.
That's pretty much it from the SEMO Marketing Podcast for this week. We hope you enjoyed it and we look forward to seeing you tune in next week.